Okay, thoughts on that cone of learning.
You understand what I'm trying to say? Yeah. When was it done?
It did, but I didn't bring it. It seems to me like it's early 70s. Change this, although I think this was done when TV was very much part of our lives. I'm confident that it was. You know, and that's probably reflected in the fact that as you move to the more effective methods, you're really moving to hands-on and visual, you know, kind of thing. Other thoughts? Okay. Some other of the implications here. Some of the other things we need to take a look at are based on McDevale's cone of learning. In your in-class time, some audiovisual techniques, some things that you can use, film strips, film, slides, videos, things that are visual for the kids. They're used to visual. We can either gripe about that, or we can use it. We might as well use it. Overhead projector is a real versatile kind of a appliance, or whatever you want to call it. We're going to use it a little bit later this afternoon to look at some ways of teaching the faith. Tape recording. Let kids get together and do a newscast on some Bible story. Or let them tape a presentation on something and present that tape to the class. And that's very versatile, too. You know, they're used to watching TV anyway. Again, we can gripe about that fact, or we can adjust and use it. And griping about it won't change anything. Adjusting and using it will have an impact on how you communicate with the kids. The church, by the way, is doing a lot more with AV, with videotape. I assume you're aware of that. A lot more stuff in the area of videotape coming out of the church. International Center is got a whole area where they're working on that kind of thing. And you see it coming out of all kinds of churches. Some good stuff. And some not so good stuff. You have to evaluate. But if you don't have one at your church when you go there, you ought to get one. Because I think we're going to soon see the demise of the film strip and the videotape taken over. So cheap now. I mean, we bought our TV and VCR at church probably, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. And 19-inch color TV and a 4-head VCR, and we paid $850 for the two of us. Now you can go out and buy a 4-head VCR for, what, $270 on sale at Venture sometime, and a TV for about the same. You know, you're talking under $600 for both of them. $1,200, they could have bought two of them. church has to recognize that. You know, the church has always been about 10 years behind the rest of the world in terms of techniques and audio visuals and that kind of stuff. We need to, these things aren't evil. We can use them to God's glory, and we need to jump in and do it sometime. Other thoughts? Okay, also on the list there, discipline was kind of talked about. Again, I think the key is to keep it interesting, keep it exciting for the kids. Discipline in eighth graders in a traditional classroom is always going to be a struggle. And there is some struggle associated with the discipline depending on when you do the class. How many of you have had contact with confirmation class so far on Vicarage or Fieldwork? How many of you have been doing it? Okay, how many in those parishes, how many have confirmation class on Saturday morning? How many have it on Wednesday night or some night during the week? Most of them. How many in Christian day school? Okay. In the morning in Christian day school. Okay. All right. Yeah, when I was in Fargo, we did it on Saturday morning, 9 to 11 on Saturday morning. Kids were alert. Had kind of a neat time with it. You think about doing it on a weekday evening. That's when most churches do it now. We do. We switched to it in Fargo when I was there. We switched to weeknight because it's parents' pressure saying we want the weekend to go camping or, you know, whatever. We want some flexibility on the weekend. But you think about getting those kids together at 6 o'clock in the evening. Now, some of my kids at our church go to school and leave for school at 7:30 in the morning. They go to school all day long. They get out of school maybe at 2:30 and then go to their clubs or their sports programs where the coach runs their tails off for a couple hours. They stop by McDonald's and grab their hamburgers because mom and dad don't want to drive the 10 miles in and pick them up and take them over to church when it's only a 4-block walk over to church from the school. And they come up to class. Now, these kids are ready to sit down and learn the deep things of the faith, right? No way. They're ready to horse around. And they haven't been horsing around all day. They're ready to horse around. Probably the worst time you can do it in terms of the learning experience is right after school. But, you know, we're kind of stuck with that. I think the reality is that for us to go to a Saturday morning, you know, parents would really be up in arms, and I doubt we would get them there. So our choice kind of is between do you want the kids there or do you want them horsing around? I mean, do you want them absent or there and horsing around? And we've opted for there. That's why we've done some changes in terms of our confirmation class. I'll talk about a little later. The age. We've talked about some of the things going on in their heads. There are two traumatic experiences in your life, or maybe more, but two major ones. First one is birth. Most traumatic experience that anybody will ever go through. You come out of a soft, warm, cushy, muffled environment, and they drag you out into bright lights, a lot cooler room than 98.6, and slap you on the behind and try to wake you up and get you crying. So that's a traumatic experience. You want to guess what the next one is? That sounds like it. Being on the other end of it. Actually, psychologists say the emotionally traumatic, the next one is adolescence. That the next most traumatic experience is adolescence. In terms of learning capabilities, kids learn the most in the first few years of their lives. Those of you that have had young kids, just think of the amount of things they learn in the first few years. In the first 3 years, they learn to talk, if nothing else. To talk, to handle the English language. We get a kick out of the way they handle it sometimes, but that's a major accomplishment. During the grade school years, their learning is pretty active too. During puberty, the onset of puberty, the learning capabilities go down dramatically. They'll come back up, after they've matured, you know, sometime in high school. So we take kids who are at their lowest level of learning in their entire life and put them in confirmation class to teach them the deep things of the Christian faith. Now, I know it's pretty radical, but someday, I want to look at doing that at a different age. Some way of handling that. I've taught 5th and 6th graders, and I can teach 5th and 6th graders more than I can teach 7th and 8th graders. Most of them. Now, you have the 7th and 8th graders that will hang in there and work with you. But most of them, the attention span goes back to what it was in kindergarten again, for many of them, if it's there at all. You know, it may not be the best age. I don't even know where that age came from. Is it because Jesus went to the temple at 12? Where did we get that age? Bar mitzvah? I don't know. I'd like to try First Communion in 5th or 6th, something like that, and Confirmation in 10. You know, we say Confirmation teaches them to examine themselves. I'm not sure that it takes that long to teach a kid to examine himself for First Communion. If Luther's questions are important for understanding, in order to take the Lord's Supper, you're familiar with those questions, I assume. Am I a sinner? You know, that whole bit. A 5th grader can handle those. Now, again, you know, you're working with tradition. You're working with years and years of confirming kids at 12, 13 years old. And that's like pulling teeth to change that sometimes. But it might be worth looking at.
In between?
I put them in Bible class and do some creative kinds of things with them in Bible class. Maybe issues that are affecting them in their lives from a biblical perspective. I don't know that I'd try to do 6 feet apart for them. That's pretty heavy stuff when you stop and think about 6 feet apart, you know. That's some pretty heavy stuff for kids. Too far? We're going to break for lunch at 12, is that okay? Okay. The time we kind of talked about, when's the best time to do it? And again, I'm not sure after school is the best, but that's sort of when we zeroed in on. Any thoughts that you have about, yeah? Yeah, some states you can do release time, not Missouri. Missouri has a unique approach to cooperation with churches, and their approach is there will be absolutely none. Anything that you can possibly interpret as cooperation between state and church in the state of Missouri, the Missouri State Supreme Court will throw out on its ear. In some states, you can parochial school kids can ride the public school bus and be dropped off at a point near the school. Not in Missouri. At some states, you can have release time education where the kids can get out of school. If they get out at 3, for example, normally they can get out at 2 and come over to your school and or your church and do the confirmation class, not in Missouri. If you get a call to Missouri, just figure that the state will not bug you, and neither will it help you. It's just total hands-on. There are absolutely no regulations, for example, over parochial schools in the state of Missouri. The only regulations that there are is in terms of fire codes, building codes, but not educational. Now that's good and it's bad. And it's, you know, parochial school can do almost anything it wants to if it's a conscientious parochial school. That's good. If it's not, that's bad. And so you have, I don't know if you've noticed, but around, you drive around Missouri and you have so many here today, gone tomorrow, non-denominational Christian schools, you know, meeting in a garage or meeting in a church basement, K-12, one room, you know, that kind of thing. And the state just has nothing to say about that. That's fine.
I'm more later, but you didn't say a whole lot about it.
One thing I would say about that, right at this point, I think I will touch on it later as we look at some alternatives. I think that almost a given, is that if you do confirmation after school or in the evening on a weekday, and you do it in a lecture approach, the traditional confirmation approach, it's almost, there's the exceptional person that won't have this one problem, but it is almost a given, if you will. We have done that, and I don't consider myself a tremendous disciplinarian, but normally adequate to handle 7th and 8th graders in science classes and math classes and, in broken schools. I've always had trouble in a traditional class setting after school with 7th and 8th graders. You've got some alternatives. If you do that, you're going to have to make it so interesting that it cuts down the garbage that goes on. Or you're going to really put the fear into them so that they learn law while you teach them doctrine. I'm not sure that's a valid approach either. We had an interesting situation, and I think it would be true across the board. We were sitting in our Winkle, I guess that's not what it's called anymore, Circuit Pastor Conferences in Ellisville Circuit over there. We're sitting there one day, and all the pastors, and I'm the NDC, and they don't know quite what to do with me, so I go. And we're sitting there talking about what the most frustrating part of your ministry is. You want to guess? Junior confirmation. And basically because of the discipline problem. And we had all kinds of people there. I mean, there's like 12 of us sitting around the table. And to a man, it was junior confirmation. That's when Dar and I went back home. This was a few years back, and we got to talking, and I said, that's really too bad that all of us unanimously can sit there and say the most frustrating thing we do during the whole course of the week is to teach the faith to 7th and 8th grade. I said, there ought to be something we can do. Well, we got to looking around, and I remember a few years back when I had come across the individualized instruction approach, and I said, one of us ought to go to that and just find out what it's about, get a workshop going. And I ended up going to Kansas City to go to a workshop. And that has helped a lot. I think changing the style is a way to get at it. I can give you discipline techniques. In fact, I almost ran a sheet on that. But I think, maybe I shouldn't make this generalization. If I teach a group of 7th and 8th graders after school in a traditional confirmation class, I'm going to have problems. I just am. In 15 years, I'm always happy if I do that. If I change the way I do it, it works a little better. Now, there are things you can do, and I've got a sheet, I think I brought it along, if some of you want some hints on discipline in a traditional setting. I don't know, is there anywhere to run anything today? No. One in the library. We could do that later on, or I can maybe mail it back to Dave or something if you want copies of it. It's a sheet on discipline that Ray Mogg put together. I'll catch that for lunch here somewhere in my box. Ray Mogg was education exec in Minnesota South District for a lot of years and has some pretty good suggestions in terms of classroom discipline. But I'm not a teacher who likes to spend a lot of my time disciplined. I just don't like to waste a lot of time on it, if I'm happy, because it does eat up a lot of your time. What do you have?
And then I concluded that first lesson by drawing up a covenant with the students.
I've a technique that I've tried on occasion when I have one or two students that's really given me a pain is also to I write them a letter and mail it. Now, I can tell them the same thing in the class, and it won't have that much of an impact. Is if they get a personal letter from me, and the personal letter is not to them out, it's usually something to the effect of, I know that we're both there for the same thing. I suppose you could get me for lying on that, because I don't know that we're both there for the same thing, but, you know, that our commitment is to the Lord Jesus, that's true, and that what we want to have happen is for all the kids in the class and myself to grow in our knowledge of what God has done for us, our appreciation for that, and our commitment to service, to His service. Right now, I need His help to make that happen. You know, I'll say that. I need your help. I'd appreciate it if you would be able to help me with that task. And I've gotten some kind of interesting responses to that. And usually pretty positive. Well, there's some of the kids that wears off fast again, but usually some positive kinds of things. You know. Let's, I guess let's get started. It's 103. And we'll probably have some stragglers come in yet. That's okay, too. Let's start with a word of prayer this afternoon, shall we? Gracious and loving Heavenly Father, we thank you for your creation as we see it come to bloom today. We thank you for the opportunity to see that and to be reminded of how you recreate us through your Son, Jesus Christ. As we sometimes struggle joyfully and sometimes struggle unhappily with the tasks of ministry, help us to realize that our goal is to focus people's attention on you and your great love for them. Help us to grow in our ability to deal with your people, especially today as we talk about dealing with junior high kids. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. During lunch, Keith had a couple concerns, and maybe some of the rest of you did too, that maybe we want to take a couple minutes and talk about right now, and maybe some of the things that we do will relate to those too. How many of you guys are second-year students getting ready to go on a vacation? Okay, at least half, it looks like, or close that anyway. I guess I can share with what you were sharing with me. Huh? Okay. Keith was sharing some, fear, concern about what you do when you go into a parish on your vicarage and the pastor says, you've got seventh grade confirmation, go for it. You know, and it's a traditional setting. And, you know, some of the things that I've been talking about this morning relate to how you can change the setting. On your vicarage, you probably can't. You know, that's probably a fact of life. You can't do that. Because if you're going to change the setting, you're also going to want to be there to follow it through. And 1 year does not a follow-through make, unfortunately. You just won't do it. But some suggestions that I might have, and maybe some of you guys that have been out on vicarage could share some ideas and suggestions too. One of the things that I think is of primary importance is that the kids get to know you outside the setting of the confirmation class, if you're in a traditional setting especially. And maybe one of the early things you might want to do is get your class together and go on an outing or overnight retreat, even if it's just pack some tents and go out to a local camp area, you know. Take your kids out and play with them and study with them and worship with them. You don't get to know people in a classroom setting. You know, like today, I'm getting to know some of your names, but I'm not getting to know you, you know. And it works the same way in a confirmation class. If you want them to relate to you, and you want to relate to them as an adult to a high school kid, and especially as a spiritual advisor to one of God's people, you got to relate to them in other areas of life, too. And that's the same with the parish. You know, you think it... with your whole parish, you think of the people who are real pastors to their people. It's also men who know how to relate to their people in other ways than preaching to them on Sunday morning. They laugh with them, they cry with them, they love them, and they let them know that they love them. And that's an important dimension, I think, too. I think you will have some flexibility within your classroom, though, to do some different kinds of things, even in a traditional setting. Give the kids projects and assignments. and send them off into groups of three or four to work on a particular project or an application of what you're trying to do in the classroom. Then call them back together and let them report to the class. Amazingly enough, kids can learn without you too. They're not a big empty barrel and you're the funnel. They can learn as God's Word works in their lives and as they study it for themselves. And they'll have some amazing insight sometimes if you give them the opportunity to struggle through that a little bit. One of the things that happens with 7th and 8th graders when you do that is that you have to put up with a little bit of nonsense. I mean, you send them off to work in a group of four, their only topic of discussion is not going to be the off the keys. You know, they'll talk about some other things too. But give them a time limit. Say, 15 minutes, I'm going to call you back together, and then we're going to ask you to share what you came up with in your group and share that with the whole group. And they'll spend 10 minutes talking about who's going steady with who at the junior high, and 5 minutes talking about the task that you gave them to do, and it'll be the last 5 minutes, as you say, there's 5 minutes left. You know, but they'll do it, and you can come back together and begin to share it, and they'll share it with each other, and that gets them involved. They aren't just passive learners then. And it gives a little informality to your class, too, I think. You have to be able to put up a little noise. One of the tough things for new teachers to get used to, and I would assume new pastors working with kids too, is that learning is not always proportional to the amount of quiet. The kids actually can learn with noise also. And they'll make a lot of noise when you send them off to do that. But there'll be some learning that happens usually. Another good way to sort of learn to relate to them is to find out when their basketball games are, if you're in a town where the kids go to the basketball games. Eureka, nobody goes to the basketball games. But, you know, if you're in Indiana somewhere, everybody goes to the basketball games. And go to the basketball games. Now, granted, a junior high basketball game is not the picture of athletic ability and perfection, but you're not there to watch the basketball game anyway, say. Go sit with the kids. You don't have to act like a kid. Just let them know that you care about them and that you're interested in what they're interested in. If they're in a play, kids will just light up if you come to the play they're in. And again, it's not Broadway, but that's not the point. The point is you're interested in what they're doing and you care. And it's also sort of a key to discipline to care about them. If the only context they see you in, well, let me put it a different way. You can get their respect two ways, right? You can demand it, or you can earn it. And as pastor or as vicar, you have a right to demand it. However, it can work a whole lot better if you earn it. And you might have to start out by demanding it, but if you earn it by your love for them, your relationships with them, your caring about who they are and what they are. I mean, see them in the hallway, call them by name. Hi, you know, or think of something that's individual about each of them. You know, somebody mentioned earlier, I like your dress. Or, hey, I saw you in that play the other night. You really did a neat job. That was great. Or compliment them on something. Build them up. And that's a real positive kind of effect for them, too. Other ideas that you guys have come across or thoughts that you have on that whole area? Yeah. Use your creativity. Do different things. They like variety. Is it fun? Yeah.
Almost universally, totally, you start with the benefit of the doubt, and you only lose their respect, possibly. If they're disposed towards you to begin with, you can build on that, or you can lose it.
Yeah.
But you don't have to overcome her responsibility.
Well, in a vicarage, that may or may not, that may depend on what their previous experience has been, too, though.
And the first of the 2-year program, they don't have 2 years of confirmation.
Yeah. I have to think about that. That may be. It may be an individual, according to the individual kid, too. I'm just thinking of a couple kids we've got in 7th grade right now. that I'm convinced that they're not in my class, they're in another teacher's class, but I'm convinced their primary goal the first day of school is the same thing to get away with. And then from then on, they're going to try to stretch that a little farther the rest of the year. when I think of, I think the idea in general may be correct, and yet when I think of some particulars, I'm not always sure that that's the case. You know what I'm saying? Okay, maybe we'll hit some more things as we go through that would be applicable to that whole area too. Okay, I want to spend part of the afternoon at least, and you can tell me if this is not meeting your needs, looking at some approaches to confirmation and some of the things that are going on in the church, not always in large scale because most of the other approaches take a lot of work. The one thing is, if your criteria is what's easiest, it's the lecture discussion format, right? It is the easiest, quickest way to get a lot of information from one place to the other. And that's its primary value. That's why we're doing it today. You know, it's faster, and I figure that you guys are used to listening. Although we're going to throw a few visuals in here a little bit anyway. But that's its primary value. That's probably happening, I don't even know in what percentage of the parishes, but most of them would be the lecture discussion type format for confirmation instruction. How many of you have had that as your primary experience, either having been through it or done it on vicarage or fieldwork or whatever? Okay, most people have had that kind of an experience. There are some things that you can do, and we've been talking about a few of them, to kind of beef that up. In the next section, I'm going to share some materials with you on the back page there that I think will be a help in that kind of situation, especially some visuals that I think are kind of neat. Another idea, and I haven't done this, and I think it has some possibilities. I haven't done it. We haven't done it in any of the churches I've been in, primarily because of, I guess, expense, time, and logistics. But that is, instead of having your kids meet every Wednesday night for 2 hours all year long, you're going to end up with about the same time and higher quality time if you take them on 6 retreats. Just set up 6 retreats during the course of the year, and take the confirmation class away from the church, and you can even do it a Friday night, all day Saturday, Saturday night, come home on Saturday night if you don't, if you're in a situation where you don't want to be gone on Sunday, which a lot of you will be. If you're in the luxury of being in a multi-staff parish, you can probably work it out to go through Sunday also, and worshiping together on Sunday morning is kind of special too in those settings. But take one of the chief parts at each retreat. You've got a couple of advantages to that. First of all, you've got a captive audience. Okay? I mean, they're going to be there. Where are they going to go? Secondly, you don't take them right after school and sit them down in a classroom setting again. Thirdly, it's a much less formal setting, and you can do some laid-back kind of things and a lot more flexibility with what you can do with your confirmation activities. And I don't know if you've ever worked with retreats. You ask a bunch of high school kids what the high point in their faith life has been through their life. Most of them will identify some retreats, right? Most of them will pick out some retreats. And so you've got the opportunity to do that 6 times in the lives of some 8th graders. And I think that has some neat possibilities. One of these days, we may throw out what we're doing now and do that, try that, and see how that works. If you need starters for that, and again, this is pretty radical, you probably won't be able to do it in a field in a vicarage parish, but even if you're a second-year student, one of these days you'll graduate from here, hopefully. And anyway, hey, you guys all familiar with Resources for Youth Ministry from Board for Youth Services? Okay. Back in 77... the third issue in 1977, they put together an issue called Junior High Retreats. And it has 6 retreats in it. Each retreat is built around one of the 6 chief parts. So you have at least a starting point Now, if you're like me, you never list anything exactly completely out of what they did, but it sure is helpful to have somewhere to start. And I've looked through this, and I really think it has some possibilities. Again, you've got a couple of factors. One is expense, because the retreat facilities are not cheap anymore. And another one is just getting the time to do it, to take 6 weekends during the course of a year and go do that. Another one is that most of us rank sleeping with junior high kids right below root canal work, you know. But sleeping with junior high kids is a contradiction in terms in itself, but you know what I mean. It's fine. If you can let your hair down a little bit and just resign yourself to the fact that you're going to be dead tired when you get back and who cares, fine. Also could be done, I think, maybe in a lock-in setting in the church. If you get some sleep in there. There are a few things that you can either get used to, that's the way it is, or beat your head up against the wall for the rest of your life. And one of them is youth or junior high sleeping at anything. Lock-ins used to frustrate the dickens out of me. Since we have a youth director, I don't do them anymore, so they don't frustrate me at all. But about, we do one with junior high kids. But about 4 or 5 years ago, I said, you know, for the last 11 years, I have been to umpteen many lock-ins and retreats, and I'm hollering at kids all night and angry because I'm not getting sleep. I'm going to try going to one of these saying, I don't expect to sleep, and stay up all night. I was a lot happier. I was dead tired the next day, but I wasn't frustrated, see. I didn't expect them to sleep. If they slept, that was a bonus. So sometimes you just got to adjust your own mindset to some of those things, too. But anyway, I think that is a neat possibility. Anybody ever try that? Anybody here ever see that try it or try it? Think, yeah. We do something that may relate to what we're talking about a while ago, too, with pertaining to Keith's question. At the first of the year, usually the first weekend in September, we do a lock-in for our confirmants. And they come about 6 in the evening. And what we do is introduce the material that we're using that year, maybe between 6 and 10, with some breaks and games, get acquainted games and, you know, all the stuff you usually do at lock-in kinds of things. In that time span, and then we have some popcorn, some more active games from 10 to midnight. And then I look for really boring videos. Let them watch movies, you know, from midnight to whenever. Usually they go to sleep. Junior high kids, if you give them a boring enough movie, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey works great, you know. Have them all stacked out when we use that. Through the middle of the night, and then in the morning we get up, have breakfast, have worship together, and send them on home about 10 o'clock. But it's kind of neat. We build some relationships that way that we wouldn't do if we just were there 2 hours in an evening to start them off. And then, of course, in the spring, we do the other one on the sex education thing, and we leave the church for that. We go to a camp. Not that you can. Yeah, right. Yeah. Kids might feel that way. Okay, other thoughts on the retreat kind of thing? Yeah. Yeah, the natural inclination in those kind of situations is that they will mix with the people they know and not with the ones that they don't know. And they can go through a whole year of confirmation like that if you don't somehow mix them a little bit. We have that situation, too. We have at least six high schools represented in our congregation, and at and an equal number of junior highs, you know, if not more. So that's a problem. Definitely, definitely. They need that. They need to identify with the body of Christ first on their level before they're going to identify, I mean, in their age group, before they're going to identify with it in the whole parish. And I think you need some ways to mix them. And a retreat mixes kids as well as anything. I don't like these parents with junior high kids on retreat. The junior high kids don't like these parents on retreats. I use other adults. It's a rare junior high kid who wants to have his parent at the retreat. And, you know, the parents are suspicious because the kid is going to act up. Yeah, he probably is, but that's not the only reason. They just don't like, you know, we talked earlier, they don't like to be around their parents. And it makes them look like a, in their eyes, look like a baby if mom and dad have to come to the retreat. So I look for other adults. If you want some other adults. Yeah. 77.3. Their way of figuring that is there are four issues a year, right? 77.1 is the first. Obviously, this is the third issue in that year. It's called Junior High Retreat. I talked to Karen Jurgensen down there the other day, and she said they still have some issues with that. Yeah, there are six retreats. Maybe I'll pass this around. There are six retreats in it. This, I believe, which is going to be the creed, obviously. Happy is he who keeps God's commandments, the commandments. Talking with God, Lord's Prayer. We are forgiven. Obsequies and confession. Keep coming, Lord, in word and water. Baptism and celebrating Christ's presence. Lord's Supper. So it's divided very neatly into six retreats. With written by people who work with junior high kids.
Do you use a lot of your resources?
I have. Like I said, I don't do youth ministry anymore, so I don't do it as much. But, yeah, I have. I use it pretty much selectively. In fact, I'm probably the wrong one to ask. I've written some of the stuff for them, but I was they invited me over to evaluate where they're going with their materials, and they're going to make some major changes, which I think are for the better, and I think they'll be even more usable. But I think most people use them selectively rather than just going activity one, activity two, you know, you go through and make it fit the way you're more comfortable with. But it, a lot of times they're good idea starters. Kind of like ideas for children's sermons, you know, you never use the whole thing, but it gives you an idea and starts things going in your head and you go from there. But. Other thoughts? Okay. Another approach that I have listed here is contract confirmation. And again, this is one I'm familiar with, but have never done. It's almost a compromise between the traditional approach and what I'm going to show you in a little bit, which is individualized confirmation. Contract confirmation works ordinarily with a series of contracts. And I was duplicating so much stuff. Did I put any of this in there? Maybe I did. Yeah, third sheet. Good. Yeah.
I don't know why I put in here what I didn't.
That's a little rundown on what it is. The advantages list there, and some of the required work, the student can progress at his or her own speed. Notably, that would be some outside-of-class projects, memory work. You know, they work at their own speed. Student has a choice of ways in which they will express their understanding of what they're learning. They come in, talk to the pastor or the teacher of the class. They arrange a schedule together whereby they will be at the class sessions, but they also are involved in some outside activities which sort of help to apply that in their lives a little better. Maybe it's a nursing home visit. Maybe when you're doing a course on, or a section on stewardship in the Christian life, maybe they'd be reading through some stewardship materials out of Synod and sort of summarizing the approach to Christian stewardship or something like that. Some things that they're doing outside of class. And you tailor it to the individual student. You know, one of the things that the total class setting does is that it assumes that all students learn at the same rate and in the same way, right? And nothing could be further from the truth. You've got one kid with an almost photographic memory who can look at the third article and memorize the thing in 3 minutes. And you've got another kid that's going to take him an hour a day all week long, and then he's going to come up to you and stumble through it. You know, so there are different needs, different abilities, different gifts, if you will. And we need to kind of recognize that. We suspended all the memory work for one of our kids a few years back because he had a learning disability that it was just frustrating him out of his gourd to try to do memory work. And, you know, we said, well, what are we here for? Are we here to get him all frustrated and hate church? No. Which is more important, that he be able to recite the third article meaning or that he know what the Holy Spirit's done in his life? It's nice if you can do both. But in his case, we weren't going to get both. And we just suspended the memory work. And the other kids understand. They understand they're different. I'll talk more about that later. The design of contract confirmation is to cut down your in-class time and accomplish more in the long run. This particular church that was using it had 2 years of 30 weeks. And their work included mandatory work, which is primarily in-class work, okay, attended class sessions, that kind of thing, maybe a workbook, study projects, which is some of the kinds of things I was just talking about, things you do outside of class, and service projects. And what you do is you sit down and work through a contract with the individual student. There's a contract on the next page, which is on the sacrament of baptism. And you check and decide which of those sort of optional activities you will do, the student will do. And when they complete that one, they move on to the next phase. It's sort of a combination of what I'm going to show you a little bit in individualized instruction and lecture discussion kind of thing. Right, they may not meet every week. Yeah. You may have... So during the course of the year, you may have maybe you have three classroom sessions on the creed. And you'd want all your students there for those three classroom sessions on the creed. But then the rest of the time, they'd be working on their own to accomplish the goals. And you would be touching base with them periodically during that period of time. I've never used this one either. I'm just familiar with it. I've gone to a workshop where it's been presented, you know, so you're not getting the voice of experience here. You're getting the voice of, yeah, I heard about that. Thoughts on that? Anybody familiar with that? Anybody come across that or used it? Well, we're sharing ignorance on that one. Okay. The area I want to spend a little bit of time with, because it's not perfect, but for us it's working better than anything we've done before. And that is the whole concept of individualized instruction. This was not an easy one to sell, even to our church, but I did a lot of homework on it before we did it. Went in and talked to the elders. And after a lot of discussion, they said, hey, can't do worse than fail. Go ahead and try. I said, good, can you give me 3 years? They said, wow, 3 years. Won't you know in 1 year? I said, I don't think so. Can I have three? They said, yeah, go for three. We finished the second year of it now. And I think we're going to keep it. I don't think we're going to go to anything different. First of all, it's based on the idea that every student works through the material at his own pace completely. There are no whole class lectures. None whatsoever. There are a whole lot of small group discussions, and the kids work together a whole lot. I've got a film strip I'm going to show you in just a second on the whole subject of individualized instruction that will give you a better idea. A couple of the fears that I had initially when I proposed it, and I always have fears when I propose something new that, you know, try to anticipate what's going to go wrong. One of the fears I had is that we would cut down sort of the integration of the class. That has not been true, because the kids talk to each other a whole lot more now than they did when I had them sitting in rows. because they're working together on projects, and they're not always working with the same kids. I have a small group discussion, or DAR does, or whoever does, when they finish a particular section of that material, and I sit down with three or four kids and talk personally with them about their faith, whereas before I was talking to 25 of them. I have gotten to know the kids, and I think DAR would say the same thing, much better in this setting than we did in the other one. And I was pleasantly surprised that I think they've gotten to know each other better. I did not expect that. To be real honest with you, I thought one of my frustrations would be that they would not get to know each other. But they have. And I'm thankful for that. We have it set up such that we have a resource room, and right now it happens to be one of our day school classrooms, that the kids can come in anytime between 4 and 8 on Wednesday evenings and Sunday morning during the Bible class hour. They know specifically what they have to do. If you look on, it just has at the top learning package. It's the page after the ones we were just looking at. You see that? This happens to be the first one. This is the one we walked them through at that retreat I was telling you we do in the fall. They know what their goals are. The objectives are there. By the time they're through with this learning package, they will be able to describe the major events in the life of Martin Luther. They will be able to discuss some of his basic teachings. They will be able to discuss the heart of Luther's frustration and subsequent peace. They don't know what subsequent means. We'll have to explain that. I'm going to have to change that one of these days. They will be able to describe Luther's coat of arms and its meaning. They will be able to develop their own coat of arms, which is kind of a neat experience. It tells you a little about their faith as they do that. And they will be able to describe some of the developments in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. If you flip over the page, it tells you how they're going to be able to do that. Objective one, to become acquainted with Martin Luther's life and teaching. Then there are some learning activities. You'll notice that in this case, all of them are starred. The starred ones are required ones, unless they talk to us individually and make arrangements to do otherwise. First of all, they're going to view a video, and we're going to change that because that video is too advanced for eighth graders. We found that out this year. We got the video, thought, oh, great, this is better than that old black and white film strip, you know, on Martin Luther. So we put the video in, and the kids were dozing off, so we're not going to use the video anymore. It's an excellent video, but it's adults, it's not kids. We'll go back to the black and white. They view the film strip and then complete a worksheet on it. They write a short report about Luther as it's explained in the directions on another worksheet. By the way, those numbers all indicate a worksheet to them. They do some reading in a book called How the Church Grew and complete a worksheet. They listen to a tape, which I've taped on Luther's coat of arms, and complete a worksheet. Then on the next objective, it's to become acquainted with some of the teachings, the beginnings of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They do a project on expressing their faith through any one of a number of ways. They are to express their faith. I don't know what happened to that passage, the computer. I don't think the computer blew it. The secretary blew it. It spread out all over the place, and it's not all there, but they memorize that passage, and the memorization is thrown right into the thing there. After they've accomplished all that, after they've done all those things, then they arrange for a small group discussion. Three or four of them get together with one of us. We talk over some of those things that are listed there. We did that the first time a year ago last September. At that retreat, we had the kids work through that packet of material. I could not believe what they could tell me about Martin Luther. Because I hadn't taught them a thing. As I had looked at my teaching, you know, I mean, as how I understood teaching, I had not told them one single thing about Martin Luther, and it was somewhat distressing to find out that they learned it some other way. And they learned it better. That's what really got me. They knew it better than any class I'd taught that stuff to before. Now I realize, I guess I did then too, that teaching is not just pouring knowledge into their heads. There are other ways to teach, and sometimes more effectively. And all of a sudden, I sit down with three or four kids now, and talk about first article, or second table of the law, or first, second, and third use of the law. And they can tell me that stuff. And I get to spend time not telling them what it is, but talking about how it relates to their lives. Now, that I don't also don't want to paint you an idealistic picture. It ain't always so. Once in a while, we'll have a kid that does all this, and how he does it, I'm not sure, and knows nothing. You know, really hasn't soaked in. I don't check too much to make sure they don't copy, and I suppose they could have gotten it off somebody else's book, because I'm going to find it out. When they get together for a small group discussion and they think Martin Luther led the March on Selma, you know, well, then I know that they did not do anything in this material. And I will send them back. And I'll say, I think you ought to go back and work on some of that again until you can, because they know what I'm going to ask. It's down at the bottom. Until you can be ready for this longer discussion. Send them back a few times, and even the hardest-headed ones of them get the picture that they're going to do it. Now, what we do then, there are 9 learning packages like this. And I should have brought a list of what they cover. Now, we start out with the Lutheran heritage. Then we go to the creed. We break tradition there, too, because we figure you ought to know who God is before you know what he expects of you. So we do the creed before the commandments. Creed, commandments, I don't remember the order anymore of the learning packages, prayer, I believe, and then Lord's Supper, baptism, office of keys. We have a package on the Christian lifestyle, which I don't like the name particularly, but what it focuses on is stewardship, use of spiritual gifts, witness, Christian witness is included in there also. And I'm probably missing one or two. Oh, we have a package on law and gospel. I missed that too. And anyway, that's what they work through during the course. And it's designed to be a one-year program. Now, ours is set up so that when our kids go to 5th grade and 6th grade and 7th grade, they go through the whole Bible in 3 years. We figure the most important thing that they ought to learn while in our care is how to handle the Word of God. Now, the catechism is important. And while it contains the Word of God, it is not the Word of God. You know what I'm saying? It's the Word of Luther and whoever anonymous person wrote the end of that, Schwann or whatever it is. And so that's important to get it for them in a Lutheran perspective. But first we want them to know what God has to say in his Word and to be able to kind of fit that together, because there's something going on in Scripture that we need to capture the total sweep of. So 5, 6, and 7, that's what they do. Grade 8, they come in and do this. 5, 6, and 7 are not individualized yet. One of these days, maybe we will do that with the Bible section, too. I think that could be neat, too. They are confirmed when they are through. I don't know about your experience, but our experience, again, remember, we're not in a traditional Lutheran setting out there. And some of our people don't even know what confirmation is. That's small wonder. We don't know what confirmation is either all the time. But, you know, some of them don't understand what that's all about. And so they don't have a high level of commitment. I suppose that's true everywhere anymore. You know, I remember when I was in confirmation class, you just did not miss. You were there. Come hell or high water, you were at confirmation class. Not so today. If there's a soccer game that gets in the way, you play soccer. You know, that's the way it is in the suburbs nowadays, I guess. And that's happening. The way when we're doing it is a whole class setting, Don and I always had the struggle of, okay, you've got, say, 30 sessions during the course of the year. I've got a kid that's been here 15 and not here 15. Do you confirm him? We always did. I wasn't sure it was, you know, neither one of us was sure that's what you ought to do, but we always did. Well, what if he's been here 12 and not here 18? Where do you draw the line? See the question? Say he's been here all 30, has not memorized one thing, didn't put a crease in the back of his workbook, and lost his book after day one. Now what? That's not that far out. It happened. Do you confirm him? He wanted a chair. We did. Our criteria for confirmation was that you sit in a chair at least some of the time during the year. I would venture to say that's not that unusual. You know, I don't know what your experiences are, but we all have a hard time saying you're not ready to be confirmed. The advantage to this is I don't care when they're confirmed. And I tell folks that when we do the parent visits and so forth, I say, I don't care when they're confirmed. If we're serious about saying we want them prepared to take an adult role in the congregation, a responsible role in the parish, not that they're becoming members of the church, they've been members of the church since God applied word and water, you know, back at the beginning of their life, but to take an adult role in the parish, that we want them to be able to intelligently confess their faith before the congregation, then there are a certain amount of material we want them to go through. When they have been through the material, they will be confirmed. We do confirmation on Pentecost, and we do confirmation on All Saints Day or whatever's close to it in November. And whoever's ready at Pentecost is confirmed. Whoever's ready in November is confirmed. I've got one guy who missed them both so far. They're still working. And he'll get it. You know, I think he'll make it this Pentecost. We don't, but we really haven't talked about it. My personal opinion is that could be very easily handled and separated out. You know, some people fear you lose the club. I'm not sure the Lord's Supper is a club I want to use to get people to go through confirmation class, you know, but I hope that's not the only thing that they're going for or that parents are having them involved in. It puts the onus, really, on the parents and the kids to do it this way. See, because who's responsible for getting it done? Not me. I'm responsible for working with them when they come and evaluating and encouraging and helping their learning process. But who's responsible for doing it? The kid and the adult. And we're really serious about saying you're going to become, you know, you want to become a part of this congregation in a, quote, adult capacity. Then I need to let them take some responsibility for that, too. Yeah. For what? In order to do what? Is it mandatory anywhere? See? I don't, that's why I asked to do what. If you separate out First Communion and Confirmation, then you've got, in order to do nothing, I mean, you can do anything that anybody else in the parish can do with or without being confirmed. We have had, and not so much, we're too new in this approach to find out what's going to happen, it probably will. We have had some kids that could not, or did not want to, or did not have the stick-to-itiveness or the maturity, whatever, to hack 30 weeks or 1 year or whatever it was of whatever kind of confirmation approach we were taking, and so they just didn't do it. Then about 2 years, 3 years down the road, they enrolled in the adult instruction class. That's okay. You know, we won't let them enroll in the adult instruction class in eighth grade, but if they're 16, 17, or 18, I'm not going to make them go back to the eighth grade class and do the confirmation material. I don't know how you make it mandatory, though, you know. Film strip I'm going to show you in just a minute is put out by a place called Christian Educational Media. This is their catalog. It's a Lutheran pastor out of Burnsville, Minnesota that put it together. He's ALC, I think. But since he doesn't deal with women in the church, it's okay. He put that together and prints it up. I went to a workshop on it. We bought their packets. You have to buy their packets. They're not expensive, and it gives you the flexibility to duplicate them. I think they're like $10 a packet. So this whole bunch of material, of written material, on this packet that I just showed you, we purchased. Then I redid it. One of the luxuries you have when you have multiple staff is that I went to the elders, after I already had the permission to do this, and I said, now, I'll need this summer to put this all together. If it's going to fly, I would like to be relieved of some of the other things I normally do in the summer. I just want to focus on this. I didn't teach any adult classes in the summer. You know, I just spent almost solely my time on putting this thing together. It is a big investment of time. Initially, right. Each year now, the investment of time is the secretary's, not mine. As we go through the material, if I want to change things, I make notes in my book in red. At the end of the year, I give it to the secretary. You know, and she'll have to redo whatever needs to be redone and put the packets all together and get that all ready again. The initial investment of time is big. Ours is not exactly, or probably not nearly anymore, like the ones we bought. We redid it for our own purposes and from our own perspective, from the ones that were purchased, and also based on the materials we could get our hands on readily. In addition to about $80 for the packets, 8 packets, I wrote one, the 9th one I wrote, we spent I had the elders approve $600, we didn't really need that much, on audiovisual equipment in terms of tape recorders, little film strip viewers, if you've seen them, you'll see some in the film strip in just a minute, earphone headsets kind of thing. File cabinet, you know, just stuff for the program. And that was a one-time investment, except for upkeep on the equipment, but that hadn't been anything yet.
What about your master? What about your week-to-week involvement? Like, do you hang around Wednesday night before the game?
No. We've got a number of people involved in it. In our parish, and you can do this with lay people. In fact, it's good for lay people. Parents can be a big help in terms of doing some of the paperwork and handing out stuff and all that kind of thing, grading papers, some of that kind of stuff. The way we work it is that from 4 to 6, our youth director and our second, third grade teacher are in the resource room, along with a parent or two. From 6 to 8, I am, Dara is our pastor, and usually a field worker or two is there with us too. On Sunday morning, they also do this on Sunday morning. In Sunday morning Bible class, John Jameson, one of our field workers, some of you guys may know him, and a lady in our congregation who's just an outstanding teacher, she works with him on Sunday morning. You really need two because somebody's going to be off somewhere else doing a small group discussion with a group while somebody else needs to be with the kids to answer questions and so forth. But you can very easily train some of your sharper lay people to serve that same function. We happen to have the luxury of having a number of professionals around that we can plug into the program, but I don't think it's dependent on that. I think you can use other people. I think you'd go a little buggy if you were there yourself from 4 to 8 and maybe lose a little bit of your edge in terms of doing it with them too.
The small group discussion is
we do have people all over the place. We do. Right.
Anywhere
at any time. The way the material suggests you do it is to schedule them a week in advance. That doesn't work that well for us. We tried that for about 2 weeks, and it was getting to be a big pain because kids aren't all there at the same time. You know, they'd schedule the small group discussion for 4 o'clock the next week, and mom and dad would decide they're going to bring them in at 6:30. And it just wasn't gelling. So somebody will come up and say, I'm ready for a small group on Objective 2 on baptism, and you've got maybe 10 kids working around there at any given time out of a class of 20 because they can come and go as they please. And you say, anybody else ready for Objective 2 on baptism? And maybe somebody will say, I've got one more worksheet to do and I need them graded. Then I might wait until I can get another one in there and just let that person go and work toward the next objective. Once in a while you do one with just one kid, and there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, that's been pretty neat too. I had thought of that. We just got 3 new apples in the school, and I was thinking about doing some of this on disk. It would be easier to call up.
That's true.
And the kids know how to use those computers better than I do. Well, I don't know about you, but they're using them all day in school anyway, so they're familiar with that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's an idea. Other thoughts before I do a little bit with film strip here? Okay, I think the film strip may give you some more insights into what we're talking about here. And I'm not trying to do a sales pitch for this company. We just found that it works. You know.
We're not allowed to take the film strip as copyright here.
There's a couple of things that you may have recognized or may not have recognized in that film strip that we don't do.
For one thing,
it's originally set up as a 2 or 3 year program. We use it as a 1 or 2 year program. They've got a lot of scripture oriented sections, like you study Genesis, you study Exodus in a package. And since we have grades 5, 6, and 7 involved in an overview of the whole Bible, we don't do those. We just pick up the ones that relate more to the 6 chief parts kinds of things, and that totals 9. What was the other thing in there that went on? Well, let me take your question, and maybe I'll think of it. Steve, you had a comment? Oh, okay.
I think the science department with the congregation would make a difference on the success of the program. You've got, you know, say 6 to 12 kids that they can make a 6 to 10 kids which come pretty regularly. Well,
I don't think the size is going to make much difference, except you're going to need more adults. You know, the more kids you have, the more adults you're going to need around to help them with some of the stuff. You know, because we'll have portions of the evening sometimes when we only have 3 kids there. They can come and go whenever they want, and there'll be times during the evening when maybe only 3 of them will be there, especially toward 8 o'clock. Not too many of them stay all the way till 8, just 2 or 3 kids, and we still can work with the 2 or 3. So I don't see that there'd be a problem. You might be doing more individual discussions and less small group discussions as you decrease the number of students. Well, like I said, your initial outlay for equipment, of course, you can cut down the number of equipment if you have less students. Ours, we have about 20 to 25 kids in a confirmation class, and about $600, I think we actually spent about $500 for AV materials that we didn't have. We had a number of film strips on hand already, and we were able to either substitute or, you know, use some of what we had. I had to buy a number of them. The tapes, most of them, they will send you the tape script, and you put it on tape. So when you tape it, you're not investing in a tape, you're investing $10 for a package of written material, some of which is a tape script for them to listen to, that you tape it. See, that's what took up a lot of my summer. Rewriting, revising, and talking on a tape recorder in my basement, praying this phone wouldn't ring in the middle of it. You know. Yes?
Well, why was there such a need for expensive modification?
There were just a number of points that we wanted to cover that weren't covered in the material as we purchased it. And I knew that when I purchased it. But I felt like, in fairness to the folks that wrote the material and trained me how to do it, they ought to get their money. So I bought the material, and it did use it as a springboard into doing some rewriting. I think, you know, as you teach confirmation, even though you may use Concordia's material, you're going to end up doing some of it differently than they do it, even in a regular class setting. And the more you teach, the more of that you do. You know, the more revising you do. I guess that answers your question. There were just some little things that we just wanted differently.
I was wondering if maybe they had moved towards the direction of that catechism that came out from Europe that hardly usable catechism.
No. No, in fact, one of the areas we revised was to go from the old one to the more modern translation. Not the one from Europe, but the one that the CPH just finished here a little while back. They were using the old blue version. You know. Yeah.
Have the teachers noticed the difference in the students' knowledge on this topic?
Yes, definitely. It's just fun to sit down with kids that have done their work and know what they're talking about. you can do some of the refining, some of the more in-depth stuff with them rather than spend all your time on very basic kind of things. Dave?
You find that most of the students make it through in 1 year?
We had a class of 15 last year. We confirmed 12 at Pentecost, 2 at All Saints Day, and 1 still working on it. This, what I do find, and you know, one of the frustrations I still have with it, and we've been talking about some ways to alleviate that, which probably wouldn't mean much to you unless you're more familiar with it than you are right now, but one of the frustrations we do have is that kids tend to do like most of the rest of us, never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. And about March, they begin to realize that they haven't accomplished as much as they ought to have if they're going to get confirmed. And we have a parent conference, so we'd call the parents in a couple times a year, you know. And end of February, I was sitting there talking to parents. I said, you know, what are your goals as far as confirmation is concerned? Do you want to get confirmed? I was asking kids, do you want to get confirmed at Pentecost, or are you shooting for next All Saints Day, next November? And most of them were shooting for Pentecost. I said, well, Dan, in order to be on schedule, you should be at this point, and here's where you are. You know, and it was usually a big contrast. And the parents would just go, oh, but what if he doesn't get confirmed at Pentecost? I said, I don't care. I don't care when he, you know, and honestly, I don't. If they get confirmed at Pentecost, that's fine. If they get confirmed at All Saints Day, that's fine. What I care about is that they're growing in the Word, and that they're working their way through that material which we have deemed important for them to know to take a responsible role as a, quote, adult in the parish. And if that takes them a year, that's fine. If it takes them 2 years, that's fine. Whatever it takes them.
Yeah.
It really does. And it puts me in a different role with those kids. I'm not standing there telling them, you didn't do your homework and, you know, browbeating them into doing anything, because I don't care. I mean, I care that they do it. I don't care how fast they do it, you know. And we do have to encourage in the class. I don't mean to say that these are all model students and they come in and sit down and work diligently. You know, sometimes the noise gets a little bit more than it ought to be, and sometimes we have to say, you know, Jeffrey, did you come here to work or did you come here to goof off? That's the other thing, that a discipline problem, it takes care of the discipline problem, because if they're fooling around, I'll say, looks like you're finished, would you call your folks? They're gone. You know, if they really want to accomplish something, it's not too long before they realize that when they start horsing around too much, they're going to have to call their folks. They quit horsing around, and they work. And I don't have to holler. I don't have to find punishments. I just have to say, looks like you're finished, would you call your folks? Which is kind of nice, too.
In terms of evaluation of their learning, I'm not really clear on that.
The small group discussion, well, we look through their worksheets and do correct their worksheets. And where they have missed something on their worksheet or not applied a concept correctly or what else, whatever, we will call them up and individually say to them, I'd like you to look at this question again and see if maybe you misunderstood the question, or go back and look up the passages that dealt with it or whatever, and then see, try it again. I don't think you've got quite the right idea here. They come back the second time, they still don't get it. We'll sit there and explain what that thing's all about to that student individually. That's an evaluation, of course, as we go through the worksheet. The primary one is when we get in that small group discussion. You very quickly tell whether they know it or whether they don't know it as you go through discussing the implications of baptism, for example. Where's the power in baptism? You know. I've got a book. They had a chart on the wall. That's the other thing I was going to mention. I knew it'd come. They had a chart on the wall of who's progressed where. We don't use a chart on the wall because I'm afraid it motivates some by embarrassment, and I'm not sure that's real good. We keep a chart in a little book. And as they accomplish an objective, we check it off, and it goes right through all 9 of them. When they're through with 9, they don't have to come anymore. 2 weeks ago, we had our first one finished up this year. And see, it's like middle of March, and he didn't have to go to confirmation class anymore because the kid works hard. He went to it, and he got it done, and he's ready to be confirmed in June now. But the checklist keeps track of where we are.
Like, I remember
is at first, but once they realize a small group discussion's coming and they're going to have to know something in the small group discussion, it usually takes care of some of that. One of our problems that still remains is this time of year, when the kids realize that they have to get in gear to get it done if they want to be confirmed by June 7th or whatever Pentecost is this year, they tend to be more sloppy than they were early in the year because they tend to start trying to fly through this stuff, you know. And we've been talking about how we can, what we can do with that, how we can change that a little bit so they aren't doing it so rapidly. And we've got some bookkeeping efforts, I think, that will help us do that. We've let them come and get their own materials when they want them, and some of them have worked way ahead in the worksheets and way behind in the memory work. And next year we're going to hand them out a packet at a time. They can't go any farther than that packet. When they're through with that packet, they can get the next one. And I think that'll pull in the reins on that problem. But, you know, we're the second year, and we're still working some bugs out of it. But so far, everybody is unanimous that's working with it in saying we like it better than whatever we had before. I'm always open to new ideas, and if somebody comes along with something that looks better yet to me, you know, we'll probably give that a whirl. But right now, it's working, but there's still bugs.
What's the cost and time involved in going to their workshops where they have on the list that you have to go to their workshop?
Yeah, I tried to call them this week, and I got a recording saying they're out of the office all week because I was going to call them to find out where they were having workshops and all that. Yeah, they sprinkle them around the country. I went to one in Kansas City. The cost was just nominal. It seems to me like it was maybe $50, something like that. No, it's just a one-day workshop. What they'll do is take you to a parish where they're doing it. Say, that's where the workshop is. And you go through it, first of all, as if you're one of the kids for part of the day to see how that all works together. And then you go through how to set it up in your own parish for the other part of the day. Don't quote me on the $50, but I know it wasn't much. It was real cheap, and it's a one-day kind of thing. And then that opens up any purchase of any of the materials to you. I think I put a materials list in, or partial list in here. Did I? Maybe I didn't. Yeah, okay. Yeah. See, their year one is mostly scripture. We accomplish that in other ways, so we don't use that. Their year two, we pull some of that, and the three creeds, Lutheran heritage, of course, that one you saw. Lord's Supper and optional over there. Now, we pulled out what made up the six chief parts, and that's what we purchased, and then redid it. Yeah.
Have you so far had very many
We have a couple of moms, especially a couple that come a long distance to bring their kids, that do stay, and they'll occasionally pick up one of the tapes and work through it, or help. They're always helping the kids, or helping us grade papers or whatever, and we do encourage that. The experience in the film strip where we had a dad that came and sat and then read the paper and then put the paper away. We haven't had that exactly yet, but we've had more parental interest this way. We've had, by the way, some parental criticism. We've got some parents that say, we don't like this. And you know who they are mostly? The kids that have been there 15 out of 30 times. Because, see, the other way, Johnny could have come warmed a chair for 15 times and been confirmed. This way, he has to do something, and Mom and Dad don't really care what he learns. Mom and Dad want him in his white robe on Sunday morning, June 7th, you know, and Johnny may not make it. When I get a criticism from a parent whose child is there every week, I'll listen pretty closely. When I get one who's really telling me behind it all, this is just too inconvenient, that doesn't impress me a whole lot. You know, I mean, still got to listen and be nice and all that, but you got to kind of read between the lines and figure out what they're really telling you and why. And basically the criticism has been, I don't like it because he has to work and he has to be here all the time. And he doesn't have to be here all the time. He can come and go as he wants.
You said they'd do some revamping the summer before you started this. Did some of that revamping include the theology?
No. Okay. No, it was just questions were asked and I didn't like the way they were phrased. I guess it's like an engineer on a design, you know, you got to fly it to find all the problems. And we'd have kids come up and they didn't understand the question and it'd have words in there like transubstantiation or you know. Well, no wonder they didn't know, and it wasn't defined, and we redid it, you know. That's it. So mostly just little things like that, some misprints. A couple of times we had a fill-in-the-blank on a Bible passage, and we encouraged the kids to use NIV, and it was an RSV fill-in-the-blank, you know, and stuff, just little stuff like that. Yeah.
You claimed that the attitudes were better and that most of the kids have gotten over the graduation idea of time. Have you found that?
I don't know that the material makes that much of an impact on the graduation idea. The attitudes are much better. The kids enjoy it more. I don't know that any material is going to particularly change your attitude of graduation. I think the parents and church give that off or squelch it, whichever, you know. I don't know that the materials are going to make any difference.
I was thinking if they learn how to learn themselves, maybe that's they know where to look, they know what the resources are.
Yeah. That class that we confirmed last year is still active in terms of our Bible class and youth group, as most of them are anyway. I guess I'd have to have more years to evaluate and see how that works out as to whether it makes an impact on them.
Yeah. I'm just curious now, at what point have you planned like this thing on Luther's? This one objective learning activity sheet. Mm-hmm. This is part of the packet that you got from them, or just something that you put together? You resourced it yourself?
They gave me something on that subject, and I don't think I brought those. But anyway, they gave me a package on that subject. The package contained a sheet like that, but not exactly that sheet. Okay? And then it contained the worksheets that are referred to in there, and it contained tape scripts that are referred to in there, too. And a list of resources that you could use for that thing. I sat down that summer with each of those learning packages, and I cataloged every AV thing that we had in the church, and actually my wife did that. But then I sat down and tried to make it fit and figure out what we needed to add to our AV to work. So what you have in front of you is not what they sent me, but it is based upon what they sent me and tailored to what we already have and what we wanted to accomplish. They did not have the LCMS stuff in there. We added that, for example. Yeah.
I was wondering, and I think it has to do with this also, how did you implement this in a congregation that she had at parochial school? You were having almost a two-track system where you were having kids going to confirmation to the parochial school and other kids were going to the public school.
And you have to work with that? You have to do confirmation at 9 o'clock in the morning on 4 days away?
I had a difficult time with that because the kids and it may be a topic you want to address, but the kids in parochial school are pretty well grounded in their Bible history. The ones who go through public school usually are not that well grounded in their Bible history. Do you do confirmation in the parochial school? Do you try to get both groups together even though they're learning? Is it, you know, I mean, where they're coming from? Is it at a different level?
Based on our personal experience with that whole thing, we've got no eighth grade. We've only gone through fifth grade right now. We'll be adding sixth next year. We're a new school starting in 82. So I don't have firsthand in the parish kind of experience. We do have within our confirmation program, two kids who are involved in confirmation programs in other Lutheran schools, okay? One of them is involved at St. John's Ellisville, and one at St. Paul de Pere in the eighth grade confirmation classes in school. And when we started this year, the parents came in and talked to Dara and I and said, what do you guys want to do about this? And I said, how about, it seems to me there's several alternatives. One, you can get confirmed at St. Paul de Pere and St. John's Ellisville and transfer over here, if you want to do that. Two, you can go through the program with the rest of the kids. Three, the evaluation really is based on the small group discussion. Now, I can't see, if you're doing off the keys in class,
why you should have to come back over here and do all that work on the worksheets and offer the keys again. Why don't you take the worksheets, look at them. If you think you got it down and want to do a small group discussion, come in, we'll do it.